America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. In the West, we keep talking about the growing threat of authoritarianism around the globe. Yet we enable a good bit of that behavior by allowing autocrats like Vladimir Putin and their oligarch buddies to send their ill-gotten gains here, investing in real estate. And by the way, that's one of the reasons that the cost of real estate in our major urban centers is so high, and other assets, just in case their fellow countrymen one day rise up and kick their butts out. In fact, sanctioning that money is one of the things President Biden is threatening if there's an invasion of Ukraine. But let's not lose the thread here. Bankers, lawyers, and accountants in democratic societies are handmaidens to the whole stinking process. Once you've listened to this podcast, you'll be one of the few people in America who can tell your representatives to stop this practice. The information you'll need is next, only on America Trends.
With us on America Trends is Frank Vogel. He's a former senior World Bank official, a former foreign correspondent for Reuters and the Times of London, and a professor at Georgetown University. He's also the co-founder of Transparency International and the chair of the Partnership for Transparency Fund. Now, we'll get into what we're looking for more transparency about when we tell you that the name of the book that he has just written is called The Enablers, How the West Supports Kleptocrats and Corruption, Endangering Our Democracy. I think there are a lot of folks out there, Frank, who have heard that somehow a lot of these potentates like Vladimir Putin have really amassed incredible wealth and fortune. In fact, some say that he is the wealthiest man on the planet. And we scratch our heads and we say, well, that's another place and they're very corrupt. And we know that he's controlled the entire political dynamic for the last 15 years or so. But we don't think that it comes back to affect us here in the West. But you point out so graphically the ways that it does.
Well, thank you very much, Larry. We need to look at this in a very broad terms to start with, and then drill down onto how individuals, including perhaps many of the people listening to this program, are actually affected by this in a very direct way. But the big picture is that more than 100 countries in the world are today governed by authoritarian regimes where the key political leaders, including Vladimir Putin in Russia, steal from their people. They are kleptocrats. And all of these authoritarian governments are run by kleptocrats who, together with their closest associates and cronies, are stealing enormous amounts of money, adding to global poverty, amongst other terrible consequences. But all of these leaders also know that should they ever lose power, for whatever reason, their successors may well not only go after them, but also go after their money. And so they go to extraordinary lengths to move their loot, their dirty money, out of their own countries into safe and secret investments, primarily in the United States, Canada, and Western Europe. The scale now of this illicit money, this illicit finance, is absolutely enormous and should be of concern to all of us.
And President Biden, of course, has said that we're really in a race to figure out whether, in fact, there are going to be more of these kleptocrats, more authoritarian regimes, or whether democracies can demonstrate that, in fact, they can move and be very aggressive in dealing with the problems that we have and demonstrating that you don't need an authoritarian to make the trains run on time. And yet you tell us in your book very convincingly that we are really accomplices, I mean true accomplices in all of this.
First of all, again, you're so right in the way you just described the situation. We are clearly today in a clash between governments that believe in the rule of law for all people, all citizens, and governments that believe there should be two rules of law, one for most citizens and another for themselves, putting themselves above the law. These are the dictators. These are the authoritarians. As they gain in confidence and in power, they become more internationally aggressive. We see China, for example, having become the largest creditor to African countries and to many countries in Asia and Latin America, and using its money to undermine governments or to increase its influence at the expense of the West with those governments. We see Russia directly interfering in U.S. elections, in the recent German election, all with the aim of reducing confidence in democracy itself. Clearly, this is an issue that involves our security and involves our democracy. And we need to find ways to counter that. And my argument is, yes, we can continue to impose sanctions on a lot of these leaders, but that's not enough. We need to hit them really hard where it hurts, and it hurts in their wallets. And we are complicit because we are not doing enough to stop the money laundering that we really have the capacity to undermine.
I remember, I'm old enough to recall, Nikita Khrushchev, when there was a Soviet Union, saying that the West will hang itself with its own noose that it will sell to itself. In other words, that the profit motivation will overcome the good desire to really improve human rights, to be ethical, to really reward those who treat their people with a beneficence. And yet we don't do that. We don't have strong enough laws, regulations. I mean, you talk about all of this in the book, The Enablers. So lay it out for us. Who is involved in the West in helping to really commit these crimes against their own people?
First of all, start with our own governments. Time and again, Western governments make big statements against corruption and in favor of human rights, and then they support commercial deals with governments that violate human rights, that in fact act against our interests. Our arms sales, and the U.S. is the biggest arms exporter in the world, include sales to many of these kleptocratic governments. So that's the big picture. But in addition to that, we have the enablers. Now, who are they? They are bankers, lawyers, auditors, financial consultants, art dealers and auction houses, real estate brokers. They operate from Wall Street. They operate from the City of London and other global financial centers. In some cases, they're very powerful, big institutions. And they aid and abet the kleptocrats to move their money into safe and secret investments. And the complicity of our governments here is that although so many of those activities are illegal, the laws are not adequately enforced. And so the risks to the enablers of being caught are rather low. The rewards in terms of their commissions and fees are very high. We can stop that. But we need to do two very big things. First, we need to ramp up the budgets for enforcement of existing laws and new regulations and new laws, and we can talk about that a bit later. But second of all, we need to understand that the reason why our enforcement is so weak is because these enablers are very powerful political actors. They are deeply entrenched in the political establishments of Western countries. They spend, in the case of the U.S., very large amounts in terms of campaign contributions. They have armies of lobbyists, and their goal, fundamentally, is to use that political muscle to ensure that regulation of their industries is very weak. And they are successful. We need to change that.
Well, it would seem as if there are so many implications for us and our standing on the world stage when we talk out of one side of our mouth and then we allow these practices and not only allow them, but participate in them either by turning our heads as a government or by, you know, accepting the fact that many of our benefactors benefit so greatly that we must look away. You say, for example, that London grad, I mean, you use that term, and I want to bring that back to the United States because I'm reading as well that a lot of the American housing market, which has been so hot, of course, during the pandemic, but even prior to that, when you look at places like San Francisco, New York, and then get back to London, London grad, there's so much money pouring in from places like, I don't know, Azerbaijan and Uzbekistan and Russia and China, that it's driving up the cost of real estate for all of us in the United States.
You've just hit upon a very, very important factor. Here in the U.S., there are movements, and I think they're gaining traction, to enforce against the enablers, to create new laws that will hit the enablers hard and try to reverse trends. And the movement here is primarily motivated, and it's bipartisan, and that's very important, by national security concerns. But in Canada, in much of Western Europe, the primary driver for action is actually the real estate prices you mentioned. Citizens are deeply upset from Vancouver to Toronto to London and Paris and Munich, and we could go on and on about major cities where huge amounts of properties, condos, houses, are owned by foreign nationals through shell companies so that nobody really knows the true identity of the owner. And these buildings are left empty because they're just investments. They're not actually used, which reduces community, reduces the strength of neighborhoods, and at the same time pushes up prices for local residents. So there's great anger about what this has done to real estate prices in many places, and that is also propelling greater activism to actually do something about this.
Frank, you remind us that the more that the West provides these kleptocrats with weapons, open market financial opportunities, the more that we here in the West add strength and power to these regimes, even though we're talking about trying to rally allies against these regimes. So how much are we really affecting what's going on around the world where we say that there's a tipping of the balance from democracies after World War II, when the United States really tried to put together an incredible group of allies and satellites, if you will, with liberal Western democracy as the symbol, and now we're backsliding. I mean, this is dangerous stuff. I mean, it really is. And when we do look at China, for example, there's so much in the news today just about the tennis star there. But, you know, how we are reacting in the West, do we want to cut off an economic opportunity for a professional sports league or for those who are endorsers of Nike and others? Do we really want to do that? I mean, is this even a question? Why is this a question?
It is difficult. Let me, if I may, give you two other examples that I think highlight how difficult it is. You may recall that Alexander Navalny, the very prominent anti-corruption campaigner in Russia was poisoned by Vladimir Putin's intelligence officers. He was flown to Germany. He was rescued. The Germans were up in arms about this. He returned to Russia, and he is now in prison in Russia. There was a lot of talk in Germany about how could the Germans truly protest against this. And the suggestion was made that they should cease negotiations with Russia to open a pipeline called the Nord Stream pipeline that would supply natural gas from Russia to Germany. In the end, Chancellor Merkel said that this pipeline was too important for Germany's economy and that they would go ahead with the project. What happened about Navalny? They issued a protest, and that was about it. They sanctioned a couple of Russian intelligence officers. Now, let's look at that project. Nord Stream 2 is controlled by a company called Gazprom, often known as Vladimir Putin's piggy bank. It is the largest state-owned enterprise in Russia. It is the biggest natural gas supplier to Western Europe. And very recently, as energy prices in Western Europe have increased sharply, we've seen Putin use Gazprom as a political weapon to undermine Western confidence. At the same time, the enablers, the financial institutions that are the core of my book, have arranged bond deals, totally legal, to provide Gazprom with over $100 billion that they have borrowed in Western markets that strengthened their position, increased their capacities, and at the same time, who knows, may have led to more stolen money by Vladimir Putin and his allies. That's just one example of how our commercial interests, in this case German commercial interests, basically shunted aside deep concerns about corruption, in this case in Russia. We have seen exactly the same thing happen time and time again with China. The head of the FBI, Mr. Gray, has eloquently talked about how China has used all possible means to undermine our technology, to steal our technological secrets, to in fact strengthen its economy and its military at our expense. At the same time, we allow an enormous amount of Chinese investment into real estate and businesses in the United States without any true enforcement to make sure we know where the money is coming from, who is behind it. That is our complicity. That is the, if you will, the hypocrisy here. And I think the general public needs to understand that this is dangerous.
Frank Vogel is our guest. The book is called The Enablers. So getting back to Khrushchev, are we selling China in particular these days? Obviously, that Russian deal that you talked about, but we're not, I think, directly involved in that, though the Europeans, our allies, are. But the question
Sorry, let me interrupt you.
Okay. Sure.
The bond deal that I mentioned, that is pension fund money. That's insurance fund money. That is those are bonds managed by major banks in London and in New York that put the money of their investors into those bonds. So we are directly helping. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Okay, no, that's a great point to clarify. So are we selling, whenever we're involved in trade deals, I mean, trade deals, I mean, you talk about kickbacks, you talk about a whole range of techniques that are used to facilitate this kind of flow from, say, east to west, from autocratic regimes into the west, thus kind of tying our hands because there's so much benefit that's going to some in our country and other countries like us. So, I mean, are we selling them the rope to hang us?
I wouldn't go as far as that. We need trade. An open global trading system is beneficial for everybody. We need to see, however, that that trading system is fully transparent. And that means that we have to directly attack the systems of kickbacks. We have to expose the hypocrisy when we see clear hypocrisy, as we have done, for example, in the example I gave you about Germany and natural gas. What do we do? We need to have a system that punishes meaningfully those enabling organizations when they are caught red-handed, either aiding and abetting the money launderers, because supporting money laundering is a criminal offense, or those corporations based here and in Europe who bribe foreign governments to win contracts. At the moment, all of the punishments are in the form of fines paid by corporations. The very top executives at these companies, even when they're caught red-handed, are never criminally prosecuted. In fact, they never or very rarely ever even lose their jobs. We need to change that, because so long as we're just talking about fines and so long as enforcement is weak, businesses, particularly banks, real estate firms, and others, will just look at the fines as a cost of doing business and continue. This has to fundamentally change.
You say that dealing with the enablers is not a partisan issue. You talk about the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, January 1, 2021, part of the National Defense Authorization Act, in a section improving the anti-money laundering. It's harder to hide ownership in companies, and it increases transparency. But that's not enough, right? I mean, we can't stop there by any means.
Well, it's so important. If we could just identify all of the people who are buying those condos in Manhattan and those houses in San Francisco and strip away the way they hide this, in other words, strip away the shell companies and truly identify the individuals, we would already be making progress because we would see that quite a lot of the money is actually stolen money and we could act against it. But it isn't enough. It certainly is not enough. It's a very important start. There are new laws being proposed right now in Congress. Not sure when they'll get through. They are put together in a proposal, again, bipartisan, called the Enablers Act, which directly deals with some of the issues in my book. And again, it's another step forward. But for all the new laws and all the new regulations, at the same time, we need to make sure that the FBI has the funds, that the U.S. Treasury investigators have the funds to really enforce the new laws and the regulations. At the moment, the amount of budget resources for investigation and eventual prosecution are very, very small relative to the massive scale of the problem.
Toward the end of your book, you lay out various concrete steps that we need to take. We like to look at trends. So, A, what's the likelihood that the things that you suggest we need to do will, in fact, be done? And what's more important, new laws, new financial regulation, enforcement, or all of it in combination?
Well, we need all of it in combination. But I also have a chapter in the book that talks about business culture. There was a time when many of the leading bankers in this country and other business leaders were very concerned that their institutions contributed and served the public interest. Today, the public interest clearly is to support democracy and to be extremely cautious in dealing with authoritarian kleptocratic regimes. Unfortunately, too many of the enabling institutions put short-term profit maximization at the top because they get huge bonuses as a result of the short-term profits that their companies make. That increases excessive risk-taking. We saw that in the subprime mortgage crisis 10 years ago. And the Great Recession that followed. We see it in the increase in money laundering and in corruption. We need to get the banks to go back to a time when they serve the public interest. That will take a lot of pressure, But all I'm trying to say is we do need laws. We do need more enforcement. But we also need, as a society, to have a cultural change where bankers are working together with government and serving the public interest. I don't think that is impossible. We've been there before at times of crisis. I think we are at a time of crisis today. And so I want to emphasize that as well as the new laws. And also I want to emphasize how important it is for the public to have greater trust in government. And one of the major reasons, according to opinion polls, that Americans have low trust in government today is because they perceive corruption in government. There's too much money in politics. A lot of that money comes from the enablers. So these issues are deeply connected. It'll take time to make all the changes. But there is a greater sense of urgency, I think, on the part of some members of Congress today and in the White House than at any time in the last 20 years. I think that is modestly encouraging.
What about the companies or the banks that we're talking about here? I mean, over the years, we've heard of things that are legal or illegal that actually have just been swept under the rug. I mean, those that are illegal, as you say, people have gotten away with them. Nobody's gone to jail. I remember Senator Joe Lieberman from my state of Connecticut saying, what's more disturbing than what's illegal is what is legal. So the question is, are the things that are now legal that really need to be looked at? Are there certain aggressors in this particular area? I know we know a lot of names we hear about moving money around the world from Deutsche to HSBC, Bank of America. I mean, are there some that are more complicit in this than others that you'd like to let us know about? And then tell us about some of the crusaders out there who we might write to and encourage them as they're looking to deal with the enablers.
Well, I think on the first point, yes, there is a lot of what we might call legal corruption, loopholes that all manner of people use to essentially pay off politicians, but they do it openly through campaign contributions, but increases their influence. There's a lot been written about this. There's a lot of reporting about it. But I want to focus people's attention a little bit also on the crimes themselves. Last year, Goldman Sachs, one of the most prominent banks in the world, certainly in the United States, paid fines of more than $4 billion because it was caught red-handed in bribery and money laundering in deals that it did with the former Prime Minister of Malaysia and his associates. More than $4.5 billion was stolen. Stolen from funds that were meant to support anti-poverty economic development programs in Malaysia itself. After all the fines were paid, the board of Goldman Sachs, and this was unique for a bank, issued a statement that amounted to an apology. They said these activities were not consistent with its values. It even clawed back $100 million in pay to its top executives and immediately recently retired executives. However, since that time, the share price of Goldman Sachs is up by more than 70% in just a year. The bonuses that the top executives have got have and been promised are absolutely massive, totally setting aside the clawbacks that they agreed to a year ago. In other words, shareholders haven't cared enough. The board of directors, whilst issuing that quasi-apology, has not done anything to remove any of the absolute top executives from the firm. And so the fines, in a way, are a cost of doing business. We have to change that. If we don't change that, I'm afraid the situation will get much, much worse. And the amounts of money pouring in illegally are so big that they can have an enormously disruptive impact on our economy. This is something we really need to do. I think there are a lot of people in Congress who are deeply concerned about this and at the White House, but we need even more encouragement, as it were. And I'm hopeful that we will start to see that. Certainly, all of the activities of activists, of investigative journalists, the publication of the Pandora Papers recently, all of this helps to sensitize the public and our political leaders to how serious the corruption challenge really is.
It seems as if American lawyers are pretty much free to work with whomever they want, and that they become the perfect friend to a kleptocrat. It seems as if bankers and others, lobbyists, all benefit and feed off this illicit activity that's going on, that's weakening the West, which we are complaining and decrying, and yet we are some ways, in many ways, involved with. I guess the question is, I mean, where is the power and the strength? Because we're talking about turning back a lot of lobbying laws that would allow us to really look at this issue much more realistically as to what's happening here. And a lot of powerful interests are laid against that. Am I being a little pessimistic here?
Yes, I think you are, but only a little. You know, it is encouraging to me when you get somebody like Representative Malinkovsky, who is a Democrat from New Jersey, working together with Representative Salazar, who is a Republican from Florida, who's working together with Representative Wilson, who's a Republican from South Carolina. They have formed a kleptocracy, an anti-kleptocracy caucus in the House of Representatives. And a similar group, again bipartisan, is working now in the Senate. They've come together because they understand that the fundamental challenge posed by authoritarian governments in terms of our security and the health of our democracy is really serious. I think that is encouraging. And everything like the Pandora Papers that I mentioned earlier helps to increase that. Now, it's still tough. But what people may ask, why are Republicans involved in this? Doesn't it sound like a big liberal cause? And the answer goes right back to 1977-78, when the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the very first law against international corruption, was signed by then President Jimmy Carter. And it said that corporations would be committing criminal offenses if they bribed foreign government officials. And some leading Republicans at the time came out and said, this act, this law is so important if we believe in free markets, if we believe in market capitalism, if we believe in honest, transparent, free trade. And I think this is a very important point. The anti-corruption drive is not partisan. It is to maintain the health of free markets and democracies and freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. This is what's really at stake. And I'm glad to see that Democrats and Republicans alike, not enough of them yet, but quite a number in Congress, are trying to move forward in the right directions.
Just to put a punctuation mark on our conversation, if in fact Vladimir Putin, who came to his position having a lot to do with the way he was able to manipulate to Boris Yeltsin, he was a deputy mayor, I think it was, of Leningrad. In other words, now some say he's the wealthiest man in the world. If that doesn't prove the point about what's going on here with kleptocrats in Russia, and they've almost brought it to a new art form. I mean, what else do we need to know?
Well,
and
I,
here we are railing against him,
yeah,
and what he's doing to try to destroy our own democracy, and we're complicit.
Yes, and it's very important to understand that Vladimir Putin and many others who have been so successful as kleptocrats work closely with organized crime. The scale of human trafficking in the world would not be nearly as grotesque as it is today if it wasn't for organized crime working together with corrupt officials to bring people across borders. Similarly, many other transnational crimes We have seen time and time again how corrupt politicians work with organized crime with terrible consequences. It was rampant right across Afghanistan, as Afghanistan throughout the years where the U.S. was engaged not only became more and more corrupt, but at the same time greatly expanded its opium production. So we need to understand also the relationship between organized crime and kleptocracy to get a sense of how dangerous this is, and to get a sense also of what we can do about it. And I would argue strongly that there is a lot that we have the power to do if we start to address all of the financial operations that are so key to all this criminal operations.
What can people do? I mean, you're putting some of the onus on us, the public, totally ill-informed on this issue until they listen to this podcast. The Transparency International group that you're involved with, some of the congressmen and senators you've identified, what should we do?
There needs to be a much more vibrant debate, and that's why I thank you so much for this program, about money and politics. We need to get concerned citizens writing to all their congressmen saying we have to reduce the amount of money in politics, and especially foreign money coming into this country without the necessary transparency and accountability. Democracy depends on openness. It depends on freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. We cannot guarantee that if at every turn foreign authoritarian regimes are trying to use their resources to undermine those very, very important pillars of democracy. The public needs to be alarmed about this and then act. Act in terms of pressuring people in public office to do something about this, because they have the capacity to do something about this.
First thing, you've listened to this podcast, you stayed with it, so now you know a lot more than you did before. You'll learn even more if you have the book, The Enablers, how the West supports kleptocrats and corruption, endangering our democracy. Frank Vogel, V-O-G-L, is our guest. And Frank, the organizations that you're involved with, can you give us the websites?
Yes. Transparency.org is Transparency International, which operates in over 100 countries against corruption. And the one I chair is the Partnership for Transparency Fund, which is ptfund.org.
Okay. Frank, I can't thank you enough for exposing such an important topic, and I do hope that people really have gleaned so much information today that they just want more and that they'll take some action. We have to. I mean, there's no question. The president has set it out. There is an issue here in terms of autocracies and democracies. And if we want to sustain that which we believe in, then we're going to have to do some work. And we can't sit aside and think somebody else is going to do it. I thank you so much for being with us today on America Trends.
Thank you very much indeed for this opportunity. It's been a delightful conversation. Thank you.